What an honor it is to be with you today. Thank you, Malone, and the Anniversary Committee for inviting me to be part of this 75th Anniversary Preaching Series. When the invitation arrived via email about 8 months ago, I was outside by the pool, enjoying the morning sun with my husband and my two lazy cats. John said, "Are you going to say yes?" How could I not? John and I were at St. George's from 2007 until 2012. The only thing that could tear us away from St. George's was the birth of our grandson, Jake. My grandma's name is Happy, so Jake calls me my Happy. He's 12 now. Time flies. John will be 80 at the end of August. He's not here with me because of ongoing balance issues and some diminished memory, but he says hey, and that he wished he could be here. Until his recent illnesses, we traveled the world, from Iceland to Australia and New Zealand, Europe to the Panama Canal. John still makes me sing and laugh every single day. He's my sweetie. I have so many unforgettable memories of St. George's. Life groups, huddles, Our Little Roses, trips to the Holy Land, and Alpha, to mention just a few. Serving in our beautiful services on Sundays and daily, day in and day out, on Christmas and Holy Week and Easter, and pet blessings. I remember one pet blessing the late Bishop Hurlong and I did together. We put a huge yellow and white tent on the front lawn of the church. Those passing by on Harding Road probably thought, "Wow, those Episcopalians are having a revival." Who knew? Our 5 years here were extraordinarily fulfilling and meaningful, and many friendships continue to this day. As priests, we are privileged to be at the intersection of people's lives, both in birth and death, happy and sad occasions. Ecclesiastes 3 says this so well. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to embrace and a time to refrain, a time to be silent and a time to speak. And in all of these seasons, we are present to bring the love of Christ into the midst of laughters and tears and sometimes silence. Being your priest was a great and awesome privilege, responsibility, and joy, and one that I cherish at St. George's more than I can ever say. When planning this visit, Malone asked which lesson I wanted to preach from the Sunday lectionary readings. As you just heard from Ephesians, Paul says, "Don't get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery." While there's much more to this in context, my first thought was, gosh, I just can't wait to preach about drinking lots of wine and that being debauchery to St. George's. So I turned to the opening passages of Ephesians about grace. I saw God's grace expressed more times than I can count in this holy place. And we're seeing it here today with 8 baptisms here and 1 baptism over the table. For many of us, the first thing that pops into our mind at the word grace is blessing food. I read about a hostess who was anxious about the tardiness of a priest who was supposed to say grace before the meal. Food was getting cold, the hostess was frazzled, so she asked her husband to bless the food. Being a good Episcopalian, he was visibly shaken at the thought of praying aloud. Nevertheless, he stood and announced reverently, "As there is no priest present, let us thank God." Thanking God before we eat is good, but there's so much more to grace. In the opening words of Ephesians, Paul says, "God destined us for adoption as his children through Jesus Christ, according to the good pleasure of his will, to the praise of his glorious grace that he freely bestowed on us in the beloved. In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses, and according to the riches of his grace, we have grace lavished on us, glorious grace, lavish grace." What better way to explore the past and future here than talking about grace? So, sorry, not sorry, Malone. I switch gears on you. If you decide not to invite me back for the 100th anniversary, it'll be okay. Christian theologians have wrestled with defining grace for over 2,000 years. It's so unexpected, so refreshing. In the 4th century, St. Augustine said grace is the unmerited love and favor of God makes available to all human beings. That's a good definition, but sometimes examples help us understand it better. One of my favorite authors, Philip Yancey, puts it this way: "I don't even try to explain grace. Jesus talked a lot about grace, but mainly in stories. I remember once getting stuck in Los Angeles traffic and arriving 58 minutes late to the Hertz rental desk. I walked up in kind of a bad mood, put the keys down, and said, 'Okay, how much do I owe?' The woman says, 'Nothing, it's all clear.' And she smiled. He says, 'But I was late.' And she said, 'No, there is a 1 hour grace period.' So Yancey asked, 'Oh, really? What is grace?' And she said, 'I don't know. I guess it means that even though you're supposed to pay, you don't have to.'" Even though you're supposed to pay, you don't have to. The Ten Commandments and other laws were given to us to let us know what separates us from God and each other. The laws are relatively simple. God is God, and we are not. Don't curse. Keep the Sabbath day. Honor your parents. Don't murder, steal, lie, or commit adultery. And don't be jealous of each other's stuff. Pretty basic. We may keep some or even most of these laws, but none of us keep them all. I am pretty sure I break at least 2 commandments just driving in traffic around Green Hills. We need grace, the unmerited, undeserved love of God. American writer and theologian Frederick Buechner said he knew how to translate theological terms into everyday language. In his little book, Wishful Thinking, he describes grace this way: "Grace is something you can never get, but only be given. There's no way to earn it or deserve it or bring it about any more than you can deserve the taste of strawberries and cream. A good night's sleep is grace. So are good dreams. Most tears are grace. The smell of rain is grace. Forgiveness is grace. Somebody loving you is grace. Loving somebody is grace." I live in Northeast Florida, and I teach classes at the Episcopal Church there on Fernandina Beach Island. One day, after a class on prayer, a parishioner told me this personal story. I have her permission to tell it here today. She talked about having a terrible day. Her husband was in the operating room undergoing major surgery. Half watching TV as she waited, she saw that there had been a devastating tsunami in Japan, injuring thousands. Not only that, the resulting waves were reaching California and the California coast where her son lived. After the surgery was over, there was bad news. She anxiously sat at her husband's bedside, waiting for him to wake up. She felt alone, wondering how God could be present in so many places that needed him. As she prayed, she heard these words, "I am. I am." The response God gave Moses when he asked God who he was. The words with which Jesus identified, "I am the good shepherd. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world." The great I am, who St. Paul says, gloriously and lavishly bestows grace. The unmerited, undeserved love of God. Over and over in Ephesians, Paul reveals God as showering his people with grace. He is not a deist God who created us and then sits far off watching. He is an active God who will not stay out of the picture. He is Emmanuel, God with us. And this breathtaking love connects us, you and me, and all of the people of St. George's, to our incredible, loving Lord, who is faithful and trustworthy. Grace doesn't always come yoked with good times or happy circumstances. Grace can also come as suffering grace, difficult grace, painful grace, costly grace. St. George's and his people have had times of suffering, difficulty, pain, and cost. I know this. I was serving here during the flood that terrible Sunday in May 2010. Bill and Frankie Rutledge died on the way to the church that day, and the whole first floor of the church, including the nave and the chapel and the bookstore and the offices and the kindergarten, were overcome by water. But I also saw what seemed like hundreds of people volunteering the next morning and the days after to help clean up the church, and especially here in the nave, so that we could worship that next Sunday. Because that's what we do here. We worship the living God. Despite its various guises, grace is always sufficient grace. And it is grace because it comes, not because we deserve it, but because God gives it. Now, at this point in one of my sermons, my husband would say, "So what? What does this mean for us?" So here it is. The grace of God means God is saying to us, "Here is your life. Wonderful and terrible things will happen. Whatever happens in your life, here or in other parts of your life, do not be afraid, for I am with you. I love you, and nothing can ever separate us. You are cherished beyond compare, gloriously, lavishly, always." Amen.